great cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
It's a tough, mean, dirty, dirty business being a great cricketer.
A lot of cricketers, you know, that's all they know. They've done it since they're 10 and they have a deep-seated fear of change.
But the great cricket is all about being the most alpha version of yourself as possible, at all costs and at all times.
I don't bat or bowl. I just feel a gully, count the number of dot balls in a row, sledge 15-year-olds, make me feel better about myself.
Thanks champ.
Oh, no, you called me champ.
Hello and welcome to the Great Cricketer Podcast on today's show. The Melbourne Stars continue to fall, this time with their lowest ever Big Bash total in their playoff final against the Sydney Sixers. The Thunder are also through in some other matches that have a meaningless name that could also double as a Grisham novel or a Schwarzenegger film. The Under-19s World Cup creates headlines that only cricket in February can. There are mancads, Instagram comments, animal attacks and passive-aggressive actions. We're talking T20 Women's Tri-Series, New Zealand Super Overs, Litchfield Sixers, Bukowski and Jackson Bird is in the studio, as is CEO of Budgie Smuggler, Adam Linforth, to question us why we do our ads the way we do and to probably ask for some money back. Also, Andrew McDonald is confirmed as being on the show. Hashtag AskTGC gets into the Ashes truth, circuiting with test players and offering your captain. This is, of course, all thanks to Budgie Smuggler, budgiesmuggler.com or .au. My name is Ian Higgins, and I'm joined by Dave Edwards to my left and Sam Perry to my right, boys. The most clicked article this week, the most retweeted thing in cricket was that mancad that we saw between Afghanistan and Pakistan in the Under-19s World Cup. I'm not going to get into the ins and outs of should it even happen, the mancad, but what I do want to know is, if you were to affect a mancad, how would you celebrate?
G'day, Higgins. A lot going on the show. Evidently.
Always feel a lot of pressure when you read out all those things that we have to now get through. You've announced that we're going to talk about these things, so now we must.
Yes. Yeah, sometimes we don't.
No, we often don't.
Yeah, we often don't.
If I was to affect a mancad, I would, much like Greg Matthews was going to, ahead of his debut 100, I would hold a minute's silence for the death of the spirit of cricket.
I like it.
Either that or some kind of tribute to cats, given when I first heard the word mancad as a small child. I thought it was mancat.
Yep.
It was half man, half cat.
Yeah. Well, were you confused with umpire Venkat?
All of those things were rushing around my head at an early stage.
Yeah. Still forming brain.
That's
at
right.
The age of 12.
Why is this dismissal referencing a man and a cat?
Yeah. Your frontal
lobe. What layers to this form of dismissal that I've never experienced? He goes, I know this is a hypothetical question, but I can't even engage in it. Like, I would never affect a man.
It happened to you.
Because, yes, it happened to me. I know the pain one feels. I know the sheer injustice and indignity of it all. And, you know, I was there at the age of 13 on 70-odd against Sutherland in a rep game. I remember everything about it. Speaking like this for
you
some reason.
Well, that game.
The race call.
Yeah,
I'm Johnny
well
Tapp.
That game. Did well that game.
I'm Johnny Tapp. And I did get 70-odd. I must always reference a 70-odd every episode. It's contractual obligation.
It's 70, it's
But I just remember the 13-year-old captain being asked by the umpire whether he wished to proceed with the appeal. And the pubescent squeals of delight from the opposition and, you know, the decision being upheld by a 75-year-old umpire who should have known better, should have had a moral code, didn't. I just remember all this rushes through my brain, my poorly formed brain at the age of 34, when you bring up, the mancad on the weekend.
Yeah.
So I could just never do it. I can't even engage. I know it's a hypothetical, but I can't engage.
He goes, I know we're going to get into mancads down the track. Can I just ask one question of Dave, though, which is, you know, on behalf of the alpha Twitterverse, why don't you just stay in your crease?
Well, and I'm amazed how you were able to rotate your head 90 degrees and still deliver that perfectly into the microphone.
With one half of my mouth curled up.
Yeah. Unbelievably so. Eyebrows stayed completely straight and fixed, though. No, I don't really believe in that. I think it's just... I don't believe in climate change.
Yeah. We're all coming off a long run with mancad today, I think.
I know that you should stay in your crease and all that, but how many things can you do as a batsman? How do you stay... I mean, we're so conditioned to walk in with the bowler. We've been doing that for years, and then suddenly there's this... And there's so much grey area around the mancad still, even though it is a legitimately recognised form of dismissal. Why is there still grey area?
So I know you guys...
Because it makes us feel fucking angry.
You guys are desperate to know what I think, what my motives would be. There's actually one on the internet. It's like I don't know where it's from, but it's like the outfield is
Info
desolate.
Wars.
The outfield is desolate. Blokes are playing without shoes or something. And the mancad happens.
Rabio.
And the batsman... like who was out and non-strikers and smashes his bat on the ground, then like runs off the field. I think we've said it before, but like the way the bowler does it there is the way that I imagine it. Is that like the batsman's so far down the crease that I can look into his eyes and I can say this is about
that should
to happen.
Be one of the decision making parameters.
I smash the stumps with my arm and ball at the same time, so it's out. And I just fucking look at him the whole time and I smash that'd be a satisfying way and then tell him to fuck off.
So maybe the mancad should be fine, but you're allowed to exercise your complete anger and rage and with no repercussion, no fines, no suspensions. That's I can understand a world where that happens.
Can we do, we should just get into it now. We're doing it now. We're doing the conversation now. Right. We're doing it now.
Okay.
You're referring
to the Afghanistan-Pakistan.
I think everyone's seen it. Afghanistan-Pakistan, the 19s World Cup.
Come up again.
The Afghan bowler, left arm wrist spinner, I think he is.
Very risky, very round arm.
Almost sells the dummy, pretending to bowl. Pakistan batsman, when the stumps are dislodged, the bails are dislodged, he's about maybe a centimetre out of his crease. And then it's not referred. The umpire doesn't say to the captain, do you want to uphold the appeal? Just goes upstairs, checks the third umpire, he's out. And then that's it.
No, there's nothing. Nothing gentlemanly about that.
I think the problem with it is that the rule needs to exist, because otherwise, as a batsman, you literally could be halfway down the wicket. Mm.
The law needs to exist.
The law needs to exist. Sorry, I said it was foolish for me.
Yeah.
Embarrassing.
You've made a mistake.
I've made a mistake.
I'll be punished
accordingly,
That's right. Anything you've done well to this point is now forgotten disproportionately in relation to the mistake.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of questions.
Is everyone in the room anti Mancad?
Well,
or Mancat?
Mancat, I believe, is the correct term. Let's call it what it was originally known by.
To you when you were six.
I reckon a lot of people feel the same way.
Still doing it.
When your frontal lobe was pushing into your head. Yeah.
Why are they calling this Mancat?
It's like saying nothing.
There's same a few Chris. Questions with the Mancad, right? So I don't think anybody... Let's get the like parameters right. I don't think anybody disputes that is the law. The law says that if you're out of your ground and you take the stumps, you are run out.
Yeah.
That's out, right? What I find interesting is like the amount of people who have since come out online in this kind of like, you know, what do they call it? Sort of keyboard warrior alpha way, saying simply don't leave your crease. I think, oh, that's interesting. You know, that there's no argument otherwise. They can't understand why there would be this question of the spirit of cricket. So spirit of cricket is this, like, you know, cuckery to be discussed.
There's nothing less alpha than having a cricket debate online, by the way.
Exactly. It's reverse cuckoo. Yeah. But anyway, to those people, and many of whom comment on the game professionally a lot, I would say if you take Mancad so as a legitimate form of dismissal in line with bowling someone or getting somebody caught behind, why do we not train for mancads the way that you would bowling someone a caught behind? Why is
interesting.
It? Why haven't we poured over footage of Steve Smith's 900 odd runs and gone, where were the mancad chances missed?
Yeah, half chance there.
Why don't we? That's right. Yeah. You know, it's just a run out chance gone begging. Yeah. Why don't we start every over with a mancad chance? Go, okay, well, I'm just warning you, just stay in your crease. It's a legitimate opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, why don't we turn up to training at 4 p.m. on a Tuesday and go, well, before I do my nets, we're doing mancad stuff, identification of mancad, execution of mancad. How do you get it done? I mean, this is the extension of it being a legitimate dismissal, right? But obviously, people inherently understand. You know, at their core, their emotional core, their moral core, the spirit of cricket court, dare I say, that, you know, wickets should probably, and I say probably come as a result of the ball being delivered out of the hand, right? Yeah. Now, it's not the law.
Yeah.
But we're never going to be able to have this conversation, especially online, because on Twitter, it's a completely binary conversation.
Absolutely.
And then when someone challenges your thought, they just leave the conversation. They just never reply to the last tweet.
But there is a reason why I think that you've got this week guys like, and dare I say, Mark Waugh, Jimmy Anderson, Jimmy Neesham, all of whom saying, I probably wouldn't do it. I instinctively don't really rate it. Mm-hmm. And that's me paraphrasing what they're saying. Like, it is an infringement to go out of your crease, right? It's an infringement to bowl a no ball. A no ball isn't penalised with being dismissed from the game.
I'd like to know a country-by-country breakdown of, I guess, sentiment towards mancat.
Yes.
Mancats.
Yeah, mancats. Yeah. All by the right name.
Men who are cats.
And to nothing affect to one, cricket. Perhaps you are.
Yeah. It's like an ancient Greek animal, like a centaur.
Yeah, it's like our cows are like sacred in India, for instance. Yeah, is the mad cat
but I think in Australia, it would be, because we love laws in Australia. Yes. We're nothing without laws, and we enforce them at all times and costs.
Yeah, we're a Commonwealth country.
Yeah.
I just like with the Afghanistan one, is it like the batsman, if the ball had been delivered, he was probably in his crease.
Yeah.
But it's just like...
and that's the fakery
of
it.
But then, like, what? This is the whole basis of the opening question. Just like the celebration, the bowler fucking wheeled away, and then like you wheeled away to the leg side, and then people like jumping over the pitch from the offside to get to him. Just like,
guilty. We got him, boys.
The problem we have is it's inversely proportional to the skill execution of the act.
And it's really, like, and this is a bad duality of life as well, because like, were I to, like a person, I'm sure you'd feel the same way, were you actually on the field while that happened, that'd actually be a horrific thing to experience. However, through the prism of a screen, you know, you can get behind all sorts of internet phenomena that is actually horrific in real life, and be perfectly dissociated from it, and lack core empathy skills, aka be a sociopath.
Yep.
So in conclusion, it was really funny.
When I saw it,
it was wrong but funny.
It was funny because it didn't happen to you. All right, we'll get back to the under 19s World Cup in a moment's time. But let's get into the big bash. So the Melbourne Stars. We're talking about gaslighting. I know what this thing means. Gas trucking.
It was it's a gas truck. Gaslighting.
Gaslighting.
That's married at first sight stuff.
Good point.
Yeah.
The Stars last year completely choked, completely fucked it. This year, having a wonderful run.
Yeah,
they only lost four games. Well, they lost four games then because they lost three in a row. Didn't they? Four in a row.
Almost. Once Harris Ralph left.
Exactly right. And now, they've lost the final. They lost the playoff final, whatever it was called, the qualifier. So it was called the qualifier, the eliminator.
I got weird things, now.
Yeah,
It wants to be the fucking NBA.
So the Stars remain the story of, because you look at that team. It's a good team. It's a good team. They should win.
Yeah, but it sort of feels like they've got four players now. Mm-hmm. Stoinis, Maxwell, Ralph, and Zampa, and the rest of it's starting to look very thin. Mm-hmm. But like I did a piece early this week on it and got some background sourcing, and one player like who knows the BBL quite well said to me, I said to them, you know, look, with the Sixers, is it a case of them playing Sixers? Is it a case of sort of seeing a few test players, a few higher profile players, and going, I'm not sure about this? And he just goes, nah. With the Stars, it's just gas truck. It's just gas truck. And he went on to say...
You can quote me on that.
He didn't say that. I did, though. But anonymously. But then, and it was also... Look, there was sort of this sense that, like, once this... You know, the Stars are great once they get in front. You know, they bowl first. Adam Zampa kind of controls the run rate, and they control the chase. But, you know, once they have to get their hands dirty, as this player said, they shit themselves. And it's just funny, I guess.
Isn't every T20 whoever gets in front wins?
Rarely. It very rarely seesaws, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Just a team who does well at the beginning who's going to win the game.
Win that early exchange. Win the ruck.
Mm.
Yeah.
And it never does a bit early in T20s.
Good point.
I'm telling you, I said the same thing last week. I want spinning wickets, spinning T20 wickets.
I mean, I've struggled to keep my attention on the Big Bash because it has just gone tennis? For a very long time. I've been watching the Australian Open a lot this
Kyrgios's
last week.
Fault. The crowd's a Kyrgios's fault.
Mm. And Barty.
I mean, I said the Big Bash just wants to be the NBA. And, you know, I love the NBA.
Yeah.
And while we're there, shout out to Kobe Bryant, RIP, the Mamba. But it's not like the NBA in the good sense. It's like the NBA in the way that it goes for ages. It's not, you know, games are seemingly on every single night. There's no structure. I can't structure my life around it. Sometimes good players are playing, and then sometimes they're overseas playing in an international competition. Mm. And the only thing that matters is the last 2 minutes of the game. That's the same in NBA as it is in the Big Bash, as you say. So, I mean, fuck me. I'm struggling. I'm struggling. The finals are on this week, aren't they?
Mm. Except the last 2 minutes of the NBA actually goes to the length of a Big Bash game, ironically. Yeah. But yeah, I know what you mean. Like, how can you have a six-week tournament that the squads change every 3 weeks?
Yeah.
It's really strange. I sort of understand why the length of the tournament is the way it is, because, like, Cricket Australia want those... They want the last round of matches, so every team is playing on that Australia Day long weekend at the end of January. That's what they want.
That's all they're trying to get to there.
They're trying to get to, and then they have the finals after that. But the problem is it coincides with the tennis.
Yeah.
And that, like, and if an Australian player does well, which these days is rarely happening, but when it does happen, it's engaging, and you lose a whole lot of viewers, so it's kind of distracting.
And also Married at First Sight, My Kitchen Rules are coming on.
That's also a big competitor.
And you know that. I'm knowing that as the finals are approaching. I'm like, oh, fuck, can't wait to get into this stuff.
Love Island, what's happening with that? Yeah. The Bachelor, it's around the corner. People are tuning in. Daily Mail articles.
Is there something happening in Melbourne sport at the moment, you know? Like, I mean, Shane Warne made the comment that the Stars have lost, what is it, you know, 7 in 9 finals whatever, bad culture, failing to mention, as has been widely reported, that he was captain for 3 of those seasons. Only 13,000 people turned up to that final as well, the MCG, you know, the home of cricket. I was in Melbourne at the time, it was 18,000 degrees and then pissed down and then went to just a mere 35 degrees with blowing a gale. But
at like 9 at night.
Yeah,
if best it was city footy, in the world, though.
If it was footy, that's right. So, and, you know, now we're looking at a potential all Sydney final, you know, perhaps the balance of sporting power briefly heading back to Sydney, and then I just see that there's 80% chance of rain there. So
nothing should be frightens good. Melbourne-based administrators and the prospect of an all-Sydney final, does it?
Nothing.
We saw that in the AFL, you know, a few years ago, Swans Giants. That would have just destroyed Melbourne.
Yeah.
They would have imploded.
With how hot it's been, no one's really reporting this, but I'd imagine the time trials for the AFL guys for pre-season actually would probably be a little bit down.
Blowing out a bit, yeah.
Yeah. So that's disappointing.
2Ks, that's just a little warm-up, isn't it? Why are they going on about it so much?
What about the Sydney Thunder? They've come from... Where they finished fourth? Sydney Thunder?
Sydney Thunder
finished fourth.
Yeah, so well, they've got players who are getting hot at the moment. You know, like it's all about... T20 cricket, it's all about who's getting hot. Alex Howes is getting hot, and Kawaja is starting to look good. And I just want to put a contention out
getting hot
there.
As in, like, heating up.
He's heating up. We're talking about the NBA.
He's got the hot
hands. He's heating up. And, like, you know, there are a few things more frightening to the opposition, to any opposition, than Usman Khawaja looking good and fancying it. Mm-hmm. And I put that out there. You know, it's like a player in club cricket who comes out and he just looks fucking good, and you think, he's going to hit a chanceless 128 today, like, with ease. that's Khawaja. There are very few things more frightening than that, I would say. Brexit, coronavirus, Khawaja looking good.
Also, Sam's is like leading wicket take by miles. Yeah. Like it's amazing. Like for a guy who's sort of fringe.
Most in history.
And most
in big bash history. So like Daniel Sam's is like a new breed of T20 player who looks like a classic T20 player. He's got all the tricks and whatever, but
he's sort of created in a laboratory.
It's anti-Australian. You know, he's not 140s chests, you know, etc. with the way he bowls. Perhaps we ask different Andrew player. McDonald today whether he'll select Daniel Sam's as an exclusive for the T20 World
Cup.
At
the same time, he's blonde and white, so... Hey, Under-19 World Cup. Speaking of that, a bit going on there.
Speaking of that.
Well, no, I'm getting there. Under-19's World Cup. Instagram comments.
Yeah.
The 19s are running red hot with some casual racism on the Instagram.
Yeah.
On top of that, they had like their match against India was just littered with just fucking heaps of weird passive aggressive like 90s Australian shit.
Yeah.
Running down the wicket, like elbowing the bowler.
Bit going on. Yeah, a bit about it.
This is the week of Fraser McGurkos has been bitten by a monkey.
Yeah. Well, I thought that was the biggest story this week.
Yeah. Well, we should have opened with that.
Yeah.
I didn't have anything to relate it to, though. It's never happened. Yeah.
Isn't that
life.
How AIDS started?
Yes.
Yeah. By getting bit by a monkey? I read actually that monkey bites
sex with
are the sex with or getting bitten at an enclosure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Monkey bites are the second most common form of animal bite in India, to dog bites. So it's actually a pretty common occurrence in India.
Right.
I don't know
they're
how.
In South Africa.
Or why.
Okay.
Oh, they're in South Africa.
Yeah.
But they were playing India.
But they were playing India. Wires crossed, poorly formed brain.
Yeah.
Lobotomy.
Mad cat.
What was he doing to the monkey?
I don't know.
He just said, like,
has there been any
context? He sort of said, really, like, blithely, you know, in the quote, like, oh, obviously I just got a little bit close and, you know, and now I've got a scratch on my face and I have to go home.
I want to know more about what the context of the monkey interaction was.
Yeah.
Well, just on that, I mean, there's that. And then he got, you know, as I say, barbecued in a horrific run out the following day. And then he has to go home.
Then we've got this
Instagram fiasco. Yeah. I was disappointed in the Instagram fiasco, both for the overt casual racism in public, and secondly because, and not connected to it, but all of the players seem to have their profile pics from the Aussie Under-19 as official shots. Yeah. Same jokes, same sorts of shots. Mm. Are we returning the sort of homogenous Australian cricketer that we've tried to get away from? You know, TGC is all about get rarer. It's Zampa. It's don't get complacent, get rarer. Why are these 19s players being the same? Why are they samey?
They are very homogenous, but this is also the future of Australian cricket we're talking about here, under-19s.
It's concerning.
Some of them are minors. I mean, we have to tread carefully here in how we talk about them, because they are the future of Australian cricket. And, you know, there have been times where great players who are now recognised as some of the greats, like Ponting, I mean, he got into some strife as a youngster. Mm. David Warner and Aaron Finch, they got kicked out of the CA Academy for having a messy room at one stage. These guys have gone on. Mm. I mean, Rodney Hogg went on a rebel tour of South Africa. Mm. Now he's making bulk cash in corpies.
I reckon. Hoggy, yeah. I reckon Ponting's era was the right kind of era that we like. It was a fight in the
we
bar.
Could relate to it.
That's
King's
right.
Cross right. 90s Kings Cross bar fight.
Yeah. Shane Warne's larrikinism was the right kind of. Like, yeah. It was the right kind of dickhead because he was a larrikin who did well. Leighton Hewitt, you know, right kind of dickhead because he did well. Kyrgios, you know, wrong kind of dickhead to dream.
Mark Warren and Shane Warne talking to a bookie, right type of bookie interaction.
Exactly. At the right time. Just wanted to know what the wicket was doing.
Exactly.
That's all it was. Yeah, bomb app wasn't there in those days. Couldn't check it.
That's all it was.
Shane Warne, test failure, kind of slimming pills.
Yeah.
Right kind of reason to take them.
Blame
mum told me to.
Blaming your mum.
The mother's very important figure in a growing child, even though he was 28 at the time.
Yeah.
What's some more examples of the right kind of indiscretion?
Well, I'll tell you what the right kind of indiscretion is Instagram comments.
Yes.
That's fucking wrong. Yeah. It's just stupid.
Yeah.
You know? Murphy's.
Anyway.
Murphy's.
Right, kind of interaction with a fan at the Wanderers.
Ben Stokes, we like that.
Yeah.
More
right
of it.
Type of, yeah, CCTV. Yeah.
Macquarie, wrong kind of dismissal, wrong kind of watch on your wrist.
Let's talk about this for the entire show. Yeah. Ask TJC, coming up next. No, Women's Tri Series is happening. There's three matches being played. There's one win for each side. England beat Australia in a super over in the first game. Then India beat England with one over to spare. Then Australia beat India yesterday down there in Canberra. This is all a warm up to the T20 World Cup. These are the three strongest teams. Oh, the West Indies are pretty strong as well. This is all sort of a prelude into the World Cup, as I was saying. Now, Australia are heavy favourites.
Oh, yeah.
Heavy favourites. I mean, they are the only professional team in the game. So they should win.
Mm-hmm.
How important are these T20 warm-up matches? Well, they mean anything? I mean, Elise Perry won the game for Australia yesterday, 149.
Yeah. Well, they had the right kind of lot, sorry. They lost against England, and I had it on, and I found myself becoming aggrieved at the prospect of them losing. Now, they nearly snatched victory from the jaws of defeat at the end, amazingly so, but came up short. But I found myself getting aggrieved that they weren't winning, because I have now been conditioned to expect that an Australian national team wins. That's exactly the area I want to be in. That's mm-hmm. a natural state of affairs. Mm-hmm. And I actually think, as much as I was angry and throwing things around the house by myself at this loss, I think this is a wonderful sign for Australian women's cricket. It's just starting to condition some of the broader fans to expect wins, that they can deliver wins. They've lost this game, and now they're going to have to make up for it by, I believe, pummeling everybody until that final where Katy Perry will sing, Elise Perry will be chaired off, and we'll all again bask in their reflected glory and feel better about ourselves and our self-esteem as a nation.
Eddos, is anything acceptable other than a complete Australian demolition job in the World Cup?
No, I don't think so. I mean, as Pez rightfully said, we as a nation will bask in the reflected glory of their success, and that's our right as a nation. And if they lose, and they should be forced to hand their passports back at gunpoint, because that's the only way that we'll get around this as
effigies.
A nation.
I'd suggest effigies.
Effigies. Not enough effigies in Australian cricket.
No.
Haven't seen a good one lately.
No. Mm. No good ones, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, a few bad ones. No good ones. Mm. Just quickly before we move on with the show, but New Zealand's have been whitewashed 5-0 in the T20 series over there in New Zealand against India. Ross Taylor actually played his 100th. He's the first New Zealand to ever play 100 T20 international matches. They lost in a super over again, New Zealand, which is remarkable. I mean, it's remarkable that it keeps happening to them. They still haven't quite found a death bowler just yet. Obviously, happened to the World Cup. Then happened they played against England in a... Was that a one-day series, Pez, or a T20 series? It was a one-day series, I think.
Yeah.
Played another super over.
Yeah.
And the scores are almost exactly the same. And then England won that as well. Now, like, a couple months later, another super over, and they just can't fucking win one.
Mm.
It's just... Poor old New Zealand. But second-best test team in the world, to be fair, so good luck to them. One more thing before we move on with the show. Will Pekowski, played for Australia against the Lions at the moment. He is going to miss the game on Tuesday, tomorrow, against the Lions, because he suffered a concussion whilst taking a quick single in a game on the weekend. This is his 8th concussion in his career, and he's 22.
It's remarkable.
He's also obviously had some well-publicised mental health issues and dropped out of squads and stuff. This is like... It's honestly getting to the point where it's like, this is quite scary, and he has to probably evaluate the role of cricket in his life. Is that harsh to say? Is that reasonable to say?
It's only... for him to say. It seemed like a freakish kind of accident, like his bat jammed into the ground or something. It's not like he's putting himself into worse positions than others or anything like that. But, we're just, as a nation, he's obviously wisely deciding to just take his time with all the Australia stuff and whatever, because he could probably have a 15-year career.
Yeah.
Well, he was so close to playing last summer when he got picked in that series against Sri Lanka.
And he's like, no,
Justin
not really.
Was playing silly buggers or something. He didn't pick him in the first test. Mm. And then he did go home from the series for mental health reasons. Imagine if he did play that first test in Sri Lanka, hit 1,000 runs on a road like everyone did.
Mm. Who knows?
Curtis Patterson played that game because he scored 200s against Sri Lanka in the warm-up games, and he got picked and he scored 100 in the test match, so that worked out well. But then, Bukowski's the guy they want.
We all want him, don't we? We're just so ravenous for his wunderkind runs. I mean, we've already had more, like Labuschagne come on. Labuschagne's not a wunderkind. He's 25, no. So he's kind of heading to the peak area runs. Smith is heading into veteran areas. So, you know, just at his peak, getting old. Right. He's about to actualise.
Wunderkind for balance.
Yeah, and we want wunderkind runs now. We're ravenous for it. This is the missing piece of Australia's batting order, and Bukowski goes and knocks himself out again. I mean, really, it's selfish.
When was the last wunderkind runs that we had?
Ponting was the first. Yeah, Clark was wunderkind.
I reckon. Hussey came in, but he was
old. Not wunderkind.
No, but he had... I was thinking before, like, who's come in hotter than Labuschagne? It's Hussey. Hussey was the same thing. Came in just, like, amazing form.
Voges, but those weren't real runs.
Well, Hussey was compensation runs. Hussey was, I should have been picked 11 years ago, and now I must score the requisite amount of runs to make up for the 11 years I lost.
Compensation runs, yeah.
Not wunderkind runs. I like it.
What a fucking weird segment one. Start with a man cat and even compensation runs. Yeah. All right. Well, huge show.
Yeah.
Jackson Bird's in the studio. Adam Linforth is also here. And Andrew McDonald's on the phone. Plus, hashtag AskTJC.
Power the machine with TGC's NutriGrade. With carbos for good energy, protein for your rig, and calcium for your dangerously high blood pressure. NutriGrade is rich in complex vitamins, so you'll never have to stress over your levers or bat speed again. An Ironman sport needs an Ironman cereal.
Joining us for a second time on the Grade Cricketer, a very privileged position, I have to say. He's a man who's played 9 tests, 34, taking 34 wickets. He's got a 5 for 372 first class wickets at 24, 17 fifers, 5 tenfers, leading wicket taker in the Sheffield Shield, heading into the Big Bash with 24 wickets at an average of 22. He's Jackson Bird. Jackson, welcome to the Great Cricketer again.
G'day, guys. Thanks very much for having me.
We've already asked you, you know, what Great Cricket means to you, so I'm not going to ask you again, but, you know, can you just confirm that the Big Bash really is just about big cash?
Well, not for me. I usually spend all my money when I'm over here. So, it's a good chance for us red ball only players, really, just to have a bit of a holiday. So, I've been doing just that.
Is there a bit of a division, a social division between red ball bowlers and white ball bowlers? Do you see yourself as crossing over, or you're a red ball man first, aren't you?
Yeah, I'll be hanging on to the red ball for as long as I can, because I probably wouldn't have a career if I didn't have that. Yeah, no, the good white ball bowlers, they usually drive the expensive cars and get paid a lot of money for playing the IPL and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, our shit kickers in the Shield have to play Shield all year.
Cause there's also not like quite as much. There's also some fringe sort of grade players also in the setup. Are they just turning up in, like, you know, 1993, you know, Datsun, just putting in the car park?
still getting
the L90 in from... L90. Like I did till I was about 23. So.
There's big double decker yellow buses these days.
Yeah, the beeline.
That's where you want to be on the beeline.
Yeah. That really like throws. Because when we talk about grade cricket hierarchies, it's very like simple. You know, you have your state player who turns up in their state gear, etc., or taped over lid, then you're first grade, and it's basically like a feudal system. We talked about that ad nauseum. But when you get into Big Bash, obviously it gets confused because you have these kind of younger guys who've achieved nothing with red ball cricket, driving better cars than guys who have achieved a lot in red ball cricket as well. How does that play itself out in the dressing room? Is it just general passive aggressiveness?
Well, I wish I was born, you know, 10 years early. 10 years later, so I could be one of those.
10 years earlier. I wish I was a Gen Xer as well.
So, it's not too bad. Like, I'd love to see what it'd be like in India or something like that, and these blokes earning $1 million a year. But it's pretty easy to knock the young blokes down a peg or two. So,
What's interesting? One thing that's interesting about you being here, Jackson, is that we've been talking a lot about, and in fact, the name of this episode is Gas Truck Part 2, reference to you know exactly what I mean when I say that. Now you actually played in the final last year in the famous Gas Truck final for the Melbourne Stars. Now you find yourself playing for Sydney. You know, is this phenomenon of the Melbourne Stars Gas Truck failing in the finals under pressure, the rare units of the Melbourne Stars not able to express themselves, is it a real phenomenon? Did you smell that last year? Did you sense that those pheromones?
There are a lot of rare units at the Melbourne Stars, but I think they think they're rarer than what they actually are.
Yes, so, go on. Playing up to it.
I don't know.
A brand?
Yeah, I think so. I think Ben Dunk especially, never been a rare bloke in his whole life. Yep, went to the Melbourne Stars, now he wears berets and he wears all Nick Madison's clothes, and, which I'll give it to Maddo. Maddo's a rare unit. Like, great bloke, but... yeah, Dunkey's not quite. He's born in Townsville. How rare can you be if you're from Townsville, you know?
So. How can you sniff a fake rare unit? Like, what is it about those kind of pretenders that you can kind of sense? Oh,
it's hard to say, but I think if you know them from a young age and you know that, that they weren't a rare unit before, and then all of a sudden they just rock up to training in a, you know, a corduroy shirt or something like that. Right. You know that he's
so it's kind of like school.
Funny haircut or something like that.
Yeah. Someone turned up in year 9 from year 8, maybe peroxide of their hair or something like that. Yeah, you're like, that's not you, no, brother. No, oh, no. I went to primary school with you. You went that.
Yeah, got an earring or a nose ring or something like that.
That's the stars.
Or as Maddo does, the bull, bull ring now.
Yeah. So. Like a Joy Division t-shirt.
Yeah.
Moans.
Yeah.
Are we talking about specifically Jake Weatherald?
You know, is it a, like, do you think it's a factor with Melbourne? I mean, you're obviously obliged legally to now say something very benign about them because you might be playing them again, but,
well,
you know.
Well, it's definitely, they do have the stigma around them. I was involved in that gas truck last year. Looking back on it, it's absolutely extraordinary how that happened.
I was not out.
What's a gas truck? I've never heard it before except for last year. Now it's, they gas trucked it.
I don't know. It's just one of those things.
It's just a thing.
It's not rhyming slang or anything.
Yeah.
No, I don't know.
Gas truck.
Yeah. No, none of us here know.
Yeah.
We're talking about it. I think the episode's titled Gas Truck
Part 2.
Yeah. Taking the gas. I don't know if that's got something to do with
it. Taking gas. Laughing gas.
Yeah. No idea. But
if you know the etymology, let's
in a nutshell, you just say things you don't know what they mean.
It's like salad. Absolutely. What does salad mean here?
If you say one thing in cricket dressing room with enough confidence, you'd be like, oh, yeah, I know what that means.
Yeah.
The tone and register of the delivery.
You don't
want to
be the bloke that doesn't know what it means when everyone else does as well.
But speaking of the Stars, I mean, you left the Stars, as we said. I hear that you wanted to stay at the Stars, but unfortunately you weren't able to because they signed
second grader
to Nile, Dale Steyn.
Yeah.
Who had a wonderful BBL, Dale Steyn. What a terrific acquisition that was.
I remember you when he was here, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what's it like at the Sixers? Can you compare the kind of experience being at the Sixers to the Stars?
Obviously, yeah, tried to go back to the Stars last year. Not enough room for me when you guys got guys coming back in like that.
How does that conversation play out? If I may ask, something about your livelihood
and private conversation. shifted on.
Is this off the record?
Is it a phone call? Because I assume that all these conversations, you know, from what I've read about Australian cricket, are always conducted via phone call, and usually Trevor Holmes is involved. But was it a conversation over the phone or a sit down?
Well, it's usually through my manager. So I didn't really have much conversation with the Stars. It was just sort of said, Jackson, can he get another contract? And they said no, so that was it. Basically. So maybe in a month out from the Big Bash, we might be able to give you one. I was like, no. But good relationship with Shippy at the Sixers, so he threw me a bone. So, that was nice of him.
Mm. Do you notice differences in, like, how Melbourne, as they say, goes about it, and Sydney? I mean, like, we know, say, we talked to Josh Phillippe, you know, he's from WA. He's like, when we train in WA under JL when I was younger, it was just running laps around the Wacker, and it was 45 degrees, and I come over here and I basically have beers with Sock. He was playing really well. Yeah. Is it like, how would you compare it with the Stars?
It was pretty, I mean, off-field... the Stars is really good. Melbourne's a great city, and it's a great time of year to be around there when the Australian Open's on and all that sort of stuff. And Stephen Fleming was pretty flexible with training and all that sort of stuff. They're pretty similar. So, blokes obviously don't think they're as rare up here in New South Wales. So, it's been good. But the schedule's been so hectic this year that we haven't really had that much time to... you know, to go out or to do stuff, because you're always sort of travelling, training, playing, travelling, training, playing. So compared to last year, where, you know, we had a fair bit of time to go to the tennis and do all that sort of stuff. So it's a bit different, but it's not really so.
You must have been so keen to get back onto the MCG wicket as well. One of the great pitchers in Australia.
End of my test career. The MCG wicket.
As I think he goes as mentioned.
No, your words. No, your words. Well, I've forgotten as well that you actually debuted, your test debut was in Sri Lanka, 2013.
No,
2012. Against Sri Lanka.
Yep.
Great debut. Nicked off. No, you bowled Jay Wardner as well.
I did,
First week at Karunaratna.
Yep.
You bounced out Samawira.
Yep.
Telling him about all of his.
I watched it this morning, so it's just in my mind.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, thoughts? No. but then, yeah, it's a, then last, no, this year. This year, Pezzett was rated as a very good wicket.
Yes.
Very good wicket. But you played in 2017 and it was not a very good wicket.
No.
Alistair Cook hit 3 million.
Yeah. I remember I opened the bowling and I bowled a sort of just a decent length ball to me and he climbed into it and he like smacked it to mid on and I was like, oh shit, I'm in trouble here. I think I tried to bounce him next ball and I got up about shin high and I was like, I'm definitely in trouble here. Turns out I was.
So. Do you still get that feeling as an international class bowler when someone just hits a ball really confidently and cleanly? You're just like, fuck me.
Yeah. You get it with in T20 especially, like bowling to someone like Stoyne who you bowl your best ball and then he hits you like 20 rows back. You're like, oh, well, my off cutter's not going to work here. what else can I go do? You know what I mean? Because
you obviously played the game this year against Stoyne when he hit 147.
I got out reasonably unscathed during that game. I bowled to him when he was just bocking around and then bowled all my overs early. And the blokes had to bowl him at the death when he was on 100. So, unlucky.
At the risk of a very juvenile question, like what's it like having Steve Smith back into the Sydney Sixers? Like, is there any kind of bump in confidence that comes with that? I mean, the Sixers have travelled fairly well all year. The Stars have been the team to beat, and then all of a sudden you're just looking around at Smith, Lyon, Hazelwood, etc. You've got a home final. You're probably feeling like you should do it from here, shouldn't you?
Yeah. Look, I'm not gonna. Yeah, I don't
want to put the
microphone
on. Yeah,
I think we are.
Yeah, we're recording.
Any time you get someone like Smithy back, he's a freak. So
what does he bring to the organisation?
I was going to say he's a freak on and off the field. Speaking of rare units.
So he's into weird shit.
I don't know what he's into behind closed doors, but I shouldn't talk too much about him.
No, let's speculate.
but he's as rare as they get, right. I reckon, but he's a great bloke.
What's he like in the dressing room? I mean, he's obviously been out for a while. He comes in. How does he kind of assert himself, if at all?
No,
as a presence.
Well, he's got about 25 bats that he brings around everywhere with him, so he lays them all out. They've all got the koala sticker.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Does anybody say anything about that? Like, is it taken on in a grade way? It's like, mate, do you have enough sticks? Or is it just like, just leave?
Yeah,
leave
just the reminding team? Everyone how much money he made off the koala as well. That sticker. It's about that big. He's a pretty good bloke, so he doesn't really... he doesn't come in and sort of try to dominate the change room when he comes in there.
What's his game? Like, is he like an indoor cricket kind of guy in a dressing room? If it's raining, he'd be like, will he be the first to be?
He couldn't sit still, for sure.
He doesn't sit still. He more just sits, stands around with his bats and practices and plays his own shots. And
is that against a mirror or just by himself
just by
in a chair?
Is he naked when he does it?
No.
Is he ever naked when he does it?
No, Smudger likes to keep his shirt on.
But naked him. From the waist down?
With a shirt on.
What level of skin is being shown?
Probably quarter skin, I reckon. Shorts on, long pants, maybe shirt on. So,
What about in the nets, though? Like, we've seen some Cricket Australia videos where he's like Mitch Stark's bowling to him and he's like talking through every delivery that he faces, like counts the amount of runs that every ball is hit. Like, is he doing that with you as well?
You can't defend to him in the nets because he'll hit one and you'll go, oh, that's gone to third man. No, four, mate. Four.
Yeah.
Like, all right. Hit one over mid off, and you're like, that's got to be close to being out. Nah, mate. Six. Mm. Oh, four, six. Mm. Hit it just over him. Oh, righto, mate. he's a freak, though. Good player.
I saw a piece yesterday saying that the Thunder and Pat Cummins haven't closed the door on him potentially playing. Yeah. I think someone from the Thunder said, if he rings, we'll certainly answer the phone.
I saw him at the Coogee Pav on Saturday night, and I can guarantee he won't call. I'll be very, very shocked if he calls. I think he was talking about coming to sit on our bench, actually, just for a bit of a power play.
Turning up
in
the case.
Yeah.
Does anyone in cricket go anywhere except the Coogee Pav? The last six people we've interviewed.
It's almost taken over cargo bar circuits, sort of 2004, 2005.
Yeah. Just quickly on a personal note as well, you missed round two of the BBL due to the birth of your first child, Maxwell.
Yes, young Maxwell.
Yeah.
Not named after Glenn.
Okay, I was going to say Norm Maxwell, the Kiwi breakaway from the 90s, but second roller. How is it playing? I can only imagine, like, it's so difficult playing cricket as an adult male with interests in life, even if you are professional. Like, how do you play cricket with a young child who has obviously all sorts of, like, their own sleep schedule, I guess?
No, it's been pretty easy, really. I haven't had to do much. I've been away for a lot of it.
Right.
So the only thing I've had to sort of get past was the constant messaging from my fiancée, Scarlett, who's doing a great job, by the way. I'm sure she will listen to this. So,
really?
But yeah, just texting me and telling me how hard it is. Oh, geez, he's blowing up again today. He's having a meltdown. Like, it's hot.
Actually,
I'm looking
after
the dogs. I'm like, oh, what do you
at the age
about?
Of about 4
I'm
months.
I'm trying to hit the top of off.
Because at that age, they're sleeping twice a day usually. So you could actually align it with the lunch break and the drink break and the tea break. You could bring them.
Potentially. But as you said, it's one of the only interests I've had since I've started playing cricket. So it's good to have. I'm just getting my life cricket balance in order now, which is good. So
I should have asked you this question at the top of the show, but like... Last week, a couple of weeks ago, we had Bo Webster on and Clive Rose. But Bo Webster, obviously, your club mate at King Bro, Slug.
The slugs.
And the whole episode was basically just saying Slug. But everyone calls you Squid.
Squid.
Where does that come from?
Well, so my good mate and Lenny's good mate as well, Brendan McDonald, great man from Gordon and Mossman Cricket Club.
A great grade man.
Yeah. Well, funny story.
State cricket as well, actually.
Plays second 11.
Plays second 11. Okay, yeah.
He's got kit.
Yeah. I'd played grade cricket for a couple of years in Sydney, and I'd worked at Cargo Bar for about 3 or 4 years.
Really?
Yeah. Drinkies? So were you like running glasses or security?
Yeah, running glasses. I wasn't throwing bikes out. So
what grade you play?
Yeah. Sorry, mate.
Licensing.
Yeah. So I used to always see this bloke in there, and he was just blind every Saturday night, as every other grade cricketer in Sydney was, and it was BMAC. And then so I rocked up to a first grade game once, playing against Gordon.
Yeah.
And he's like, "What are you doing here?" And I said, "What are you doing here?" So it turns out he played cricket. So then we became quite good friends. Driving down to Tassie when we both moved to Tassie, and he just looked at me and said, "You look like a squid." And I said, "Righto, mate. I'm not sure that'll stick." Yeah. And he said, "Well, it'll stick, mate." Okay. So we got to training first day, and Tim Coyle, our coach, said, "Righto, boys, who new blokes get up? Have you got a nickname?" And he just yells out, "Squid!" And then it stuck. So.
Was that like... Was that
my
like
mum,
sorry, young.
My mum hates it as well. Because when I was first sort of coming through with Tassie, every sort of article was Jackson Bird, a.k.a. the big squid, or known as the squid, or whatever.
Your son looks like a squid.
Thanks, B-Mac.
Bestowing a disliked nickname upon someone. We talk about alpha power players all the time.
I know.
It's a classic.
Ad nauseam. Yeah.
But I didn't think
you recognise each other from cargo and cricket, rather than the other way around.
It's like saying a school teacher outside a squid. What are you doing here?
It's actually like seeing an umpire. When you see an umpire outside...
Well, when you go to a jail.
Yeah. Right. It's... Exactly the same. You see the umpire at the pub or the shops.
Just final one from me anyway. That's obviously you spent a lot of time down in Tassie these days, and you play with George Bailey, who's obviously just played his last game at the Bloodstone Arena for the Hobart Hurricanes. He'd be a huge loss for Australian cricket, even though he's like staying within, he's a selector now, but huge loss for you guys as well, but Cricket Australia in general.
Yeah, absolutely. George is... He's a great human being, really. Yeah. I'm sure you guys would agree. There's not too many people in world cricket that don't like Bale, so... we obviously miss him as a player and a leader and stuff like that. But yeah, you can't replace guys like that in the change room. So I'm sure he'll be hanging around. I'm not sure which of the other selectors will want to come down and watch Shield cricket in Tassie. So I think he'll be doing most of those games in the future. So hopefully, I might get a game with him as a selector. So you never know.
Leverage that relationship.
Well, it's pretty funny actually. Just thinking like the guys who've done really well in Shield cricket in the last sort of decade. Like Copes has got the most wickets in the decade in Shield cricket. So there's Copeland's, Chad Sayers, yourself. Yeah. They're like quite the antithesis to the velocity of the Australian pace attack. It's strange, isn't it? How like in Shield cricket you guys do so well, but then what the Australian team wants seems to be Pattinson, for instance.
Mm. Yeah. Velocity.
Yeah, I mean those guys, those four bowlers are the best.
They're good, yeah.
Yeah, they're really good. So, and I think you do need airspeed to a certain extent in Test cricket on some of the flatter wickets.
Yeah.
But I think those guys are like Copes and Chad and all those, and Joe Menny and those guys. Yeah. They're good because they work out how to get wickets on any type of wickets, you know. So I think sort of cancelling them out because they can't bowl on flat wickets, I'm not sure about that. So and how would you know until they actually have a go as well? So it's sort of, it's a hard one, but
it doesn't frighten people, so you know it's not as marketable.
Yeah, well, yeah, maybe. So
doesn't provoke a visceral reaction in the viewer.
Yeah, I suppose the viewers would probably, they do want to watch the boys.
You want to see the speed gun, and you want to see high numbers on the
speedometer. Well, the speed guns are wrong anyway, because I bowled one that was 144 k's in BBL this year, and I don't reckon I've bowled that quick ever.
It's like when Stark bowled that 160 k and bowled to Ross Taylor.
That guy in the Under-19s World Cup bowled one that was 175 k's.
He's quick, though.
To be fair, he's fucking quick.
He's
rapid,
and he's 16.
Oh, ordinarily, we'd sort of sign off now, but we'd actually ask if you'd hang around, to speak with the CEO of Budgie Smuggler, who I believe is a compadre of yours, and B, to help answer questions from our from us TGC. Would you hang around?
Yep, absolutely.
All right, beautiful.
It's Queensgrove Sports' massive birthday sale. All brands reduced to clear. Kookaburra, Grey Nichols, New Balance, GM and more. Everything's priced to make you think it's actually worth it. Need a new stick to kid yourself that you'll actually average above 11 this season? Don't waste your money on actual therapy. Try retail therapy instead. We've got last year's stock with this year's stickers and double the price. We've got the brands of yesteryear too. Remember MRF? Brian Lara used one. So that must mean you're good enough to use it too. Flintoff and KP used a woodworm. I'm pretty sure they went into receivership, so we're basically giving them away. Remember when Albion sponsored Chris Martin, the worst batsman of all time? I have no idea how these bizarre alien pads didn't sell out. We've got them! What about those weird Indian brands that look like railway sleepers, weigh the same, and have absolutely no middle? We've got you covered. We even sell bats with no stickers on them, so it looks like you're trying to get sponsored, even though you're in fifth grade. So rush into Queensgrove Sports today and make this season your last.
All right, fellas, we actually landed this interview very, very late doors, and not surprising because the guy we're about to speak with has been extremely busy. He's now in the upper echelons of Australian cricket, so as a result, you're just lucky to get any response from anyone at that level. But he has been very good to make himself available to speak with us. It is a coach on the rise, one of the rare, extremely intelligent coaches in Australian cricket. I'm talking about Andrew Ronnie McDonald. Ronnie, if I can call you that, welcome to the Great Cricketer.
Great to be on.
Said with passion. Because it's your first time on the show, we'll start the same way we always do. Can you tell us what grade cricket means to you?
Oh, it's where it all begins, isn't it? It's the heartbeat of cricket. It's the production line. It's everything. It means everything to me. It's where I started, and it's where you end up finishing as well. So it's the start and the end.
Started the end, yeah. Cradle to
grave.
I can
relate to that. It was the start and the end. There was nothing in between that for me. The start and end.
Can you give us? I mean, your coaching star is just on the rise so much. I mean, so much so that your playing career will sort of at the moment just be sitting underneath what you're doing in the coaching ranks. But can you give us a brief outline of where you started with grade cricket? Maybe what the tone of play was when you were there.
Yeah, well, it's a lot different to the landscape now. There's so many leagues and different opportunities for players, and it's very rare that your top line players get the opportunity to play great cricket. But when I first started in 1999, North Melbourne Cricket Club is where I started my career, moving down from the country. It was a different landscape. The state players and international players were regularly available. It took on a totally different, meaning to what it does today. When players at the Australian level play, it's every now and then. And I think some players haven't played for several years, which is a shame. But unfortunately, that's the way it is. And I suppose the opportunities for players elsewhere far outweigh, grade cricket at this point in time.
And just maybe like to provide a bit of contrast from then to now, like, can you maybe just illustrate to us, you've just come into the Australian assistant coaching role. I mean, what is your, what's your style as a coach? What do you bring in that's probably a bit different from perhaps some of the other coaches going around the traps?
Oh, I don't know, because I haven't studied too many other coaches. It's not something that you regularly do. You work and operate in your own environment. So I suppose my key sort of philosophy with things is to connect with the player first and foremost. If you connect with the player and you understand who you're working with and everyone's different, then you've got an opportunity to potentially value add to their game. But if you don't make that initial connection, then yeah, you'd probably render useless to that player. So that's as simple as it. I keep it. If I can connect with them, I get to know them, understand how they move, how they play. And that takes time as well. I think some coaches rush in to give advice. Mine is, if I don't have anything to say at that point in time, don't say anything until you really get to know and understand that player. Because that initial intervention or your first intervention with that player, you've got to create trust in that. And if you get that wrong, then it's a long way back.
You're obviously looking after the Renegades last season, got them to the title. Obviously, this year not associated with them, with the Aussie team. I mean, how satisfying is it for you to watch the Renegades now only win four games and be bottom of the table?
It's actually quite frustrating because I've gone into fan mode. So I'm sure that on the inside that they sort of know what they're doing, but on the outside I've sort of scratched my head at a few things. But I've gone into full fan mode, so I think we shouldn't talk about the Renegades. But my son's ridden the ups and downs, and he can't understand why we're not winning this year. So it's burdened the household this year. So I hope Maxi Kling can put a few more wins on the board next year for us.
When your son asks why they're not winning as much, I mean, how tempting is it just to say out the side of your mouth, well, you know, Dad's not coaching anymore.
Oh, I say it all the time. Nah, that's not serious. I try to take him through the fact that his father's joined Football Club as well, and he hasn't had a team that's ridden at the bottom for any period of time, and I'm a Carlton Football Club fan, so I'm sort of used to it, but he can't get his head around it, so it's all about learning for young kids.
I'll jump in here. So you're about to, I guess, head over to the IPL, and you've been there before. You've been the bowling coach for the Bangalore Challengers, I believe, and now you're the head coach of the Rajasthan Royals. What's the difference between the Big Bash and the IPL? Is it just a huge, massive spectacle? Is it what we see is just, you know, we just see cheerleaders and R&B music from afar when we're watching it on Foxtel? But what is the experience like being there on the ground in the IPL?
Oh, it's fantastic. It's like nothing else. I mean, the fans, it's well documented. It's pretty much a religion. But, I mean, my second run down the mountain in terms of coaching the IPL, hopefully it's a little more successful than my last. I got sacked halfway through my contract. So I'm hoping that the Rajasthan contract lasts a little bit longer than the previous attempt at coaching the IPL. But a fantastic competition. The world's best players. It's got its own window and opportunity. So the quality of cricket is like no other as well. So I think in terms of cricket and entertainment and then the fans, it's a great mix.
Just one's a little bit different here as well, and just to let the viewers know, Jackson Bird's actually sitting in the studio with us. There's no stitch-up. Everyone knows what's going on here. But, I mean, a question for you, Birdie, about Ronnie. As we've just mentioned, the Renegades went from winning the title last year with him as coach to barely winning a game this year. The Victorian side won the last five Shields or whatever it is and can barely win a game this year. You know, how much of that do you put down to Andrew McDonald's coaching, as a player for Tassie?
It seems to be the difference, doesn't it? You got a good gig now, being able to do the IPL and the 100 and still coach Australia as well. Yeah. If you need a pretty ordinary opening bowler for any IPL teams or 100, bowl a few up front, maybe. Just let me know. I'll give you my
I'll let you know.
Front, maybe. I haven't thought about it. Maybe I'll bat a bit as well, about six.
Over 7, 9, 11 and 13.
The one man that starts the furthest outside leg stump than any other batter in history. It's phenomenal. Yeah, actually get back in line with the stumps.
I've got no idea why I do it. So Damien Wright actually taught me my techers, but he went the other way. He was backing outside leg stump.
We're doing technique talk here. We're talking about batting. Ronnie, can you give us an insight into your experience taking or helming the Australian team over in India? What are the differences between, say, coaching at the Renegades level or Victoria level or whatever, to doing the national side, and maybe just an insight into, the dressing room hierarchy, of course, off the field?
Oh, it's a lot bigger operation. I didn't realise that you could have an operation so big. It's there's a lot of obviously support staff. There's a few differences in terms of the investment in the team. But ultimately, at the end of the day, it still is a cricket team and runs pretty similar to most cricket teams. You've got selectors, you've got a coach, you've got a captain, and you've got, the players underneath that. So it was a phenomenal experience to do a series in India against the world's best team. you know, at three main venues over in India was, you know, was a great experience, albeit we couldn't get the job done. But that side, as we've seen, I think they've just wiped New Zealand 5-0 as well. I think it's going to go down as one of the best sort of white ball sides. You know, and we're going to have our work cut out heading into the T20 World Cup. If we're going to win it, then we've got to unlock the secret of getting Kohli and Sharma out first of all before we get to the rest of them, which is a pretty strong middle order. So, but yeah, great experience. You know, the players were great, and really happy to hand it back to JL. There's a lot of pressure in that job.
A lot of pressure on this bloke now.
Well, if you ever want to come onto the Great Cricketer podcast again, you're very welcome, because that baritone voice, I could just listen to it for days. Yeah. And I'm sorry to objectify you in that way, but it is a compliment. Andrew McDonald, thanks very much for joining us.
No, thanks for having us, guys.
All right, well, devout listeners of the Great Cricketer will no doubt be aware that it's at this moment in time we tend to give a wonderfully considered shout out to Budgie Smuggler with highly prepared,
scripted,
integrated advertising in homage to the company, the Australian company that helps keep the lights on at the Great Cricketer. Not that we have an actual office, it's a figure of speech. But rather than make something else up today around how good Budgie Smuggler is, we thought we'd actually just invite in the man who runs it himself, you know, entrepreneur king, London based, at one stage Clio Bachelor of the Year nominee.
Oh, that's ancient, but fucking I feel I'm up for a bit of a stitch up this afternoon somehow. That's in the first 30 seconds.
Adam Linforth is in the studio here. I guess the first question, Lenny, is if you could perhaps just on air evaluate our advertising over the course of the year and the uptick, no doubt the uptick in Budgie Smuggler's brand awareness and sales.
Yeah.
So we've initiated this performance review and it's live on air. Yeah. So if you could please be specific.
Yeah, I thought it was generous to say that it was well prepared and scripted. the rambling, sometimes coherent linking of something in Australian pop culture to the development of our swimwear, you know, fortunes, basically. But yeah, I think the first time I saw you give a live show, we sponsored was when we sponsored some live shows, in the UK, and I turned up, and the comment that one of you made at the end of it was, I think that is the worst promotion we have ever given to a brand ever. And I was just sitting there going like, this is like the most money we've ever spent on anything, and just watching you guys tank like at the one. I don't know what you said at the other shows, so like, they're fucking live shows, so I don't know what's happening.
You think there's like a Sandler element to it, like, you know, so bad it's good kind of thing?
Oh no, it's beyond that.
Sandler has a little bit of
movie. Yeah.
But no, you've recovered well, you know, like I've actually enjoyed some of them as well. So,
very careful word.
So no, I think you'll get there eventually.
Well, what should the ad be this week? You know, I mean, what's the angle on Budgie? We're talking matching swimwear this week. We're talking about
on the spot. So there's, I mean, well, custom stuff's something that we're always pushing. They are available at the moment for people listening at home. Flick as a note, but now how would I like you to promote it this week? Well, if you're putting me on the spot, how about I put you on the spot?
Okay.
It's a multiple. You've got two options here. It's like a choose your own adventure.
Okay.
Option A is promoting the importance of the growth of how you see Budgie Smuggler developing over the years in relation to Australian politics.
Okay.
That's one option. The other is to describe a pair of smugglers. Let's say, what's a pair? The pineapple pair that I'm pineapple shirt pair that I'm wearing at the moment, but to describe it as an Australian wine from somewhere.
Okay.
Option A.
Well, politics. I was going to say that I was talking off air to the boys beforehand, and we were talking about Barnaby Joyce's video that he posted just before Christmas, I believe, where he tilted the camera towards the sky and was talking about a higher power. And the only way that video could have been better, we've actually used it as a sting before in this podcast, but the only way that could have been better if he was wearing budgies in front of his cows, preaching to a higher power, and that is Adam Linforth.
So instead of pointing the camera up to the sky in reference to God, he should point the camera to his budgie smugglers, to his crotch, yep. his groinal area.
Yeah. And he would have been wearing power. The pineapple pear.
Yeah, blood okay. flowing.
Okay. I'd also imagine in a political sense, I mean, this 21st century is the Asian century, obviously, and Australia has a big decision to make around whether it pivots towards the US or China. And with that in mind, I'd strongly advocate that budgie smuggler pivot towards the latter, to China, for various reasons. And so with that in mind, today we're pleased to announce budgie smuggler will be developing Chinese flag budgies. I don't know if you want them as customs.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't know if now's the right time to be getting into China necessarily, but I like it as a play, as a power play.
You'll be developing a production centre in Wuhan, and that'll be the complete outsourcing of budgie smugglers, which will go against all their brand ethos that they've built carefully over the last 10 years.
Yeah.
I didn't think you could tank more than the live show, but we've nearly gone close.
Yeah. I'll bring Birdie into this. Squid. Just want to say squid. All the players are wearing budgies. All the international players, state players as well?
A lot of them are. Nathan Lyon's been walking around the change rooms in his own smugglers.
Oh, really? And the nice Garys.
Yeah, he'd be like, "Oh, Squid, do you want a pair of my budgies?" And I've got a heap in the car, and I say, "No, I'm good."
So Steve Smith's
not offering anyone. I'll speak to Linny, mate. I'd wear the Smithies. But.
Yeah, Steve Smith's not offering anyone bats. He's got 25 bats, but...
Funny you say that, I actually got two bats off Smithy because I was sitting next to him in the change rooms during a game. He didn't have room for them in his kit, so he just said, "There you go, mate." I said, "Well, cheers."
I don't have space for these, can you take them?
On a side story.
How did your sponsor Spartan feel about that?
Are they still in business? I'm not sure. Heard of they've had a few legal troubles, but... Yeah.
While you're both here... I believe that there's that Linny, you actually have, you know Jackson from school days.
Yes.
And you've actually utilised his talent. You're the first to spot his talent.
That's true. The first ever organised cricket game I played was like an intra-school game. And like you played in sort of different coloured houses. And because I was the captain of the house, they gave me the choice of who to pick in the team. And I had actually never played an organised game of cricket before, but that wasn't going to stop me from picking myself in the team
first,
because Jackson Bird was in it, and just everyone in the school was sort of petrified of this 6'5" bloke wandering around talking out the side of his mouth. And you had to pick a kid from like each of the younger years, so I'm like, fuck, Jackson against the year 8 kid is just going to be brilliant. And we had his older brother Ian in the same house, who's bloody a gun cricketer as well, and another bloke, Jack Benson. So we just had this team. We had this team fairly stacked. So I just threw the ball. I didn't even know where to stand on the field, sort of thing. I didn't bat, didn't bowl. I didn't even field a gully. I just watched Jackson run through the kids, and won the trophy. Yeah,
we did win.
Won the trophy. Right. It's the biggest trophy I've won to this day. I still got it. So.
You got to keep the house trophy. You didn't have to hand it back. I think you meant to hand those back.
You are. Our name engraved in it, though, and yeah. I wasn't letting go of it. So it's in storage somewhere.
Budgiesmuggler.com.au.
We've done it again. We should roll straight into Ask TGC. All right. This one isn't on the agenda, but it came in late, and I thought it was good.
Okay.
Dear TGC, at 4:30 a.m. last night, I was woken by the sound of evil laughter. I rolled over, and sure enough, it was coming from my sleeping husband. I nudged him awake and asked what was so funny. "I'm playing a funny game of cricket. It's all in there. Somehow, there are whips involved." Then he rolled over and went back to sleep. He's a big fan of your show and never misses an episode. I'm pretty disturbed by this, to be honest, and was hoping you could lend some insight in the form of dream analysis. Thanks in advance, worried wife. Pez, thoughts?
What?
That's my wife. Text again.
Correct.
It's true. During the week, I woke myself laughing, and my wife, who is a light sleeper, and also her mum is a psychologist and dream analyst, is very interested in, you know, how, like, on, in the psyche of sleep, and she asked what happened, and I was just cacking up, and I just said, I'm in a very funny game of cricket, somehow there are whips involved. That's it. And I have, you know, like, you can't remember all of your dreams, but so it was whips. I was laughing. I was having a good time. I don't know how to elaborate on it anymore, but...
What's a connection? Oh, yeah, like whips good. Off the pads?
No. So not whips off the pads, actual... no, like you know, whip cracking, what do you call it?
BDSM.
You know, like, yeah, kind stuff, of, I suppose yeah. so. Yeah, but yeah. but it wasn't sexual to my knowledge.
Right.
I'd recently watched a video from 2012 of me in the US with some friends where I was using a whip and at them. Yeah, so I think that had landed in my subconscious. I mean, I'm talking about this off the cuff here.
Yeah.
And
oh, really? I thought you were scripted.
So obviously, yeah, I was just playing a game of cricket and there were whips, and I've found it very funny. I don't really know what else to say. I mean, you guys are free to analyse it.
Well, I can't analyse that because that's pretty weird, but I had everyone has cricket dreams where they have the dreams where you know, you can't get your pads on and then you get timed out.
That's a very common one.
I had a similar dream to that, but it was I got timed out because I couldn't get out onto the ground because I couldn't get my gloves on. And then I looked inside my gloves and I had salad sandwiches inside my gloves. So I woke up from that in a cold sweat, like, what was that? I told all the boys the next day and they were just like, you're a freak, mate.
So it's the specificity of, like, why is it a salad sandwich?
Yeah. What was I doing? Saving them
for later? Why they have multiple sandwiches within the glove as well?
Yeah, I don't know.
So, saving them for later.
Far out.
It was weird. How is your hair?
I really reevaluated my life after that.
As you should have.
Yeah.
Okay. Question. Thanks, Tori. All right. Ben Pears writes in, Dear Higos, Pears and Dave, and let's just say... Bertie and Linny, long-time listener, first-time DM slider. I have a moral dilemma, and naturally I'm going to three blokes from the internet. I'm a 19-year-old playing for a rural team. My dilemma comes on Saturday at a game where the other team got bowled out in the 44th over for 156, and I came in at 6 while we were 4 for 97, so they needed 60 to win. I then proceeded my standard batting of swing and hope for the best. The partnership continued, and shortly we were 154... going into the 20th over while I had the strike. The opener, last season's skipper, and current highest run scorer for the competition, all rolled in one mid-30-year-old man with a questionable rig, was on 95 at the other end. With the opposition keeper and captain hating this bloke with such deep passion only found in cricket, the field was called in to stop a single, restricting his potential ton. Blocking the first ball off the new bowler, a few years off debuting in Australia's Biggest Loser, that threw down slow-medium-paced pies off 5 steps. Okay. Vivid. Lacking the skill to nurdle a single, I hit the second ball for a 1-bounce 4 over cover, ensuring my partner couldn't bring up his 100 as we finished the game. So did I do the right thing? Or should I have chipped the field and taken a single, thus potentially sacrificing my wicket in the process, but granting the opportunity for the bloke 95 not out to bring up his 300 of the season? Alternatively, if I did do the right thing and my moral conscience is clear, did I just alpha him? And how do I bat in a position other than 11 for the rest of the season with him in the leadership group? Alternatively, do I quit my summer job, leave the club, and move back to the beach where I go to uni? Brackets, I also got a new stick and this was my first time using it. Potential N/O token. Close brackets. PS, when is Chop King Cologne being released? # ask TJC.
There's a bit going on there.
There always is. Yeah. There always is. Yeah. I don't have a problem with what he's done here. I mean, he's a number 6 batsman, isn't he, Ben? So technically a lower order batsman. Why should he be expected to nurdle the strike and allow this other batsman to bring up his 100? Shouldn't it be incumbent on the batsman, the senior batsman himself, to farm the strike carefully and ensure that he gets his 100?
And also, like, this notion of I could have just chipped the infield. Like, chipping the infield is fucking hard. Like, who has the ability to chip? Like, to That's, chip? Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like AB de Villiers, a couple
Steve
of others.
Smith.
Yeah, yeah. Like, yeah. I'm going to deliberately, like, loft the infield, but not so much as to hit a boundary.
Just to get a 2.
Yeah,
just
to get a 2.
I've often mishit one, then claimed that I've chipped it.
I've chipped it, yeah.
With these things, as always, he's like written a really, like, he's written part of the answer in the question that, like, has nothing to do. So he's like, alternatively, do I quit my summer job, leave the club, and move back to the beach? Like, that's not part of the question. That's what he just wants to do. So can you guys just say that? No, you fucking stay in your job, you selfish prick, Ben, and you commit. You commit to the club for your life, and no, don't go back to the beach. Get a studio apartment.
Right, that fixes. Why does it have to be a studio?
Yeah. Well, Ben can't afford it.
Right.
Because he's lost his job.
Right. So, you can't do afterpay on apartments either.
No, you can't.
Unfortunately.
Lenny, would you stick with that?
Yeah, I was disappointed with the studio apartment. Now, you're in a regional town. I don't think there's a lot of them either. It's, you know, the market conditions.
Good point.
Would be slender.
High density urban living.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, enjoy the space. Tree change. You know, a lot of people from the inner city, urban areas, coastal areas are moving out to the bush. So embrace it. Take your 40 knot out or whatever you got, and just carry on like as if you. Why aren't you opening next week?
Yeah.
Would it be better for business though if he did move to the beach?
Michael.com.
.au. Don't forget the AU. All right. This next one is from Nick Carabine, willing to use his last name. I play in the MCC 40v40, I assume that's an age group, Sunday league comp, with most teams normally scrambling to, or maybe it's 40 overs, isn't
overs,
it?
Overs, yeah.
Normally scrambling to fill out an 11 each week. Last week we won the toss and elected to bat first, quietly minding our own business on the way to a scratchy 9 for 177 off our 40 overs. A strapping young lad who was the epitome of an alpha male arrived. He chose to walk over to our huddle and then started asking questions about the game. What over is it? How many overs can you bowl? After some careful consideration, we quickly realised this enormous figure was actually a member of the opposition side who'd arrived in the 29th over because he was playing golf that morning. After having a conversation with him, I quickly realised that not only was he wearing a Premier cricket jumper and whites, but he also had a test match long-sleeved playing top on. There's no question mark there. That's just me reading that out. Being the nuffy I am, you cannot purchase these in stores, coming to the conclusion that at some stage in what I image was an incredible junior career, he ran drinks, subfielded or had net bowled for the test team. Is this choice to wear the test top an alpha power play? The ultimate alpha move, an effective scheme to scare off opposition players. We were sure that he was going to bowl 140 kilometres per hour and hit a chanceless 120 knot off 45 balls. For those wondering, he didn't bowl and got run out for a duck. Your thoughts on his choice of attire?
My thoughts are you shouldn't have been intimidated by this, because you can only gain, and Jackson, correct me if I'm wrong, but you can only gain like a test long sleeve sweater if you're not a player, if you've purchased it at some sort of auction or other. He's purchased playing gear.
Or he's friends with a player.
Or it was Mickey Edwards.
You could have been Mickey.
Out of Melbourne.
Or he's, you know, he's big and strapping. He's come from golf at like Royal Melbourne after a charity auction at KPMG.
Yep.
You know, that he's purchased it at. He can't actually catch a ball, but he does have presidential, you know, height.
Did it have signatures on it?
No, it was just a playing top. Yeah, this is signed by Rod Hogg.
It's always Rod
Hogg. It's like saying Rod Hogg.
Defamation proceedings happening very soon.
My name's Rodney. So, no need to worry about this.
I wouldn't be too concerned.
Okay. We might just do one more. Okay. Still might do one more. Go back to the first question. I jumped in with Tori's DM. Philip, hi TGC. I've been meaning to write to you guys for a while, but never got around to it. Okay. Anyways, I'm doing so now. I just wanted to share a story that makes me think we might have lost the Ashes. I've been living in the UK for the last few years, which meant I had good proximity to the World Cup and Ashes cricket. It also meant that my Austrian wife was subjected to more cricket than any of the previous years of our relationship. Austria is not massively famous for its cricketing pedigree, and subsequently my wife only has two facts about the sport. One, it's always on. Two, at around October, there is a month or so of kind sport. The footy is over and the cricket hasn't started yet. Kind sport is a
chaos.
It's no sport. As you know, in 2019, my wife's first cricket fact had never been more true, that it was always on. Credit to her, though. She sat on the one chair in the living room without visual access to the TV and diligently managed to not watch a ball for 6 months. Fast forward, and we had drawn/won the Ashes and everyone was feeling okay. That was until one day I came home from work and my wife is sitting in the living room singing to herself, "Same old Aussies always cheating," on repeat and not in key. I thought, oh my days, they have done it. The English have won the World Cup, captured the imagination of new European markets, and are trolling people in their own homes via family members. It got me thinking, given how admirably my wife didn't engage in the cricket, and yet she still managed to pick up the tune of "Same old Aussies always cheating," maybe we did lose the Ashes. I mean, the Big Bash crowds aren't great. What is your take? Cheers.
Find the reference to the UK capturing new European markets quite incorrect, given what's taken place this week. I mean, Brexit is real. You know, they're losing European markets more than anything. Similarly, I also think that, historically, Australians are privately proud of their ability, have been privately proud of their ability to cheat. And then thirdly, this idea, I just keep, people keep going back to the idea of Australia losing the Ashes. Like, if Australia lost the Ashes, what did England do with the Ashes this time around? Did they not lose it? Did they, you know what I mean? Why are we focusing so much on Australia losing?
It wasn't clean cut, it was a retention. We don't understand it. It's not binary. I mean,
what's the take at the pro level, Jacko, with in relation to Australia and retaining the Ashes and the linguistics around that?
Oh, I think retaining's as good as one, really. You can't. Yeah.
I could comment on it from a medical perspective.
Please.
Okay.
Finally.
My blood pressure through that Ashes series, like, I couldn't. I don't even play cricket. I was having cricket nightmares. Jofra Archer got in my head. Like, I lit for maybe like a month or two afterwards. I had to go to the doctor. I had high blood pressure. They wanted to put me on medication. And then I've got back to Australia.
Is that a lifestyle factor? Or a lifestyle problem? Or just blaming it on cricket.
I've got back to Australia. Right, water's hitting triple tons. We're absolutely dominating everything that comes. And through the summer, it was still high at the start, at like midway through, and then now it's calmed right down. I feel safe again. Yep, same. The world is back in normal working order. Clean bill of health from the doctor, and I think that beats. I don't know if that beats. It was a win. It was a win.
Yeah. That's a standard grade cricketer throughout summer, I reckon. Yeah. High blood pressure the whole summer, and then once cricket's finished for the year, they go back to normal.
Yeah, but we didn't win it. All right. Well, thank you very much, Jackson Burr, for joining us in the studio. Adeline Forth, thank you very much. Brendan in the corner as well, thank you. Dave Edwards, thank you. Cheers, Bez. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Back again next week. Cheers.